Blog Talk Radio.
Like to request our flight attendants be seated at this time. We're landing in about 1 minute. Thank you.
It's the CJ Sweat Show, and we are live back on this beautiful Friday evening in Southwest Virginia. Want to thank everybody for joining us today. All guests will appear on the Guest Reports Hotline. We are live in the Wilkinson Central chat room through the Blog Talk Radio website. Got Tampa in here. Got Bama in here. Should have a few more joining us in just a little bit. This is your Season 114 kickoff show. I am happy to be bringing it to you. I apologize for not bringing it to you earlier. I meant to be here on Wednesday with the show. And then, guys, I got to tell you, Wednesday morning, I pull into work. And my friend, who actually just moved out of the Roanoke area, had posted this video of the shooting. And none of it really made sense at first. I kind of thought, because the area we live in, there's a lot of rural areas where the shooting happened is at Smith Mountain Lake, and it's got some pretty rural spots as well. And my first instinct was somebody's probably just shooting around the area. Maybe it's hunting because it was so early in the morning, and maybe just the loud gunfire kind of freaked the girl out. But I mean, this whole thing, I mean, it escalated so quickly, and I mean, that whole day just. It, being at work, it was completely useless because all of us in the office were following this, and guys, this type of stuff, it does not happen here. And I mean, like, I've got probably 3-4 big memories that aren't positive, but I can tell you exactly what I was doing during those days. 9/11 being the obvious one, the Virginia Tech shooting, which was about 45 minutes from here up in Blacksburg. I remember everything about that day, and now this. It's just one of those things, and I didn't know either of the two people killed. I didn't know the lady injured, but I knew plenty of people who were directly were connected to all of them. I mean, it's a small area, and so when something like that happens, and you start seeing it get on national news. I mean, like, the BBC came. Like, you know, that's like world news. I mean, this thing, it became a really big deal. And just, I didn't really know how to take it from a community standpoint because all of my friends and family and people that I know and love were just completely in shock that something like that would happen here. And we were receiving the same type of attention that Charleston and other areas have gotten in recent history. And it's a shame that it happened. And I couldn't do a show. I didn't know if we were going to go to a candlelight vigil or what we were going to do or what our community needed from us as far as support goes at the time. It was rough. But we are live back today, and I can tell you, if you have not seen a lot of posts from myself or Just the Guy or any of the new bloggers, it is because we are working on the Wilkinson Central website. It is close to being live. Just a Guy has done just a fabulous job with the site, guys. I cannot wait to show it to you. We've got a couple more edits to make. We're trying to make this as accessible as possible for all of the writers, so everybody will be able to log in. But once this thing's launched, it's going to just be fantastic. And I think you're going to have a completely different experience than anything you've ever seen before. Listen, if the shows have been a little bit more sporadic, if his posts have been more sporadic and he hasn't done a lot with recruiting, I can tell you it's not because we're sitting around twiddling our thumbs. It's because we're working on this website. And essentially, once this thing goes live, my hope is that every day you guys can wake up to something different and see a different news aspect or see different rankings or something going on or some sort of different writing or whatever. And we can get a couple things going through each day. And so when we have, I mean, we've got like 5-6 people, I think maybe even a little bit more than that, signed up to help out with this. And it's on a consistent basis. And if this thing works out like we've got it planned, guys, I got to tell you, this thing's just going to be awesome. In our world, I mean, it's already taken off. We went from 175 coaches last season to 189. Most of them are moving up here. Now, the other thing that I'm going to agree to do, and I'll put this out there in What If Sports, if anybody wants to jump on board with this, I will cover D2, Division 2, on one condition. And that is that somebody signs up to be the main writer for it. And this way, my version of covering it is to essentially just talk about it on the show. Whoever the person is that's writing for Division 2, I will allow you on the show very frequently to talk it up. We'll go back and forth on it a little bit. We'll get your analysis on it. I'm not going to let Division 2 be covered the way that the other two divisions are yet. I think we need to wait until we get to that point. But if somebody wants to take total control of Division 2 and then appear on the show every once in a while, I will give you one tab on Wilkinson Week or Wilkinson Central. I'll give you one tab, and you'll be able to go on there and do what you wish with it. But that's on that condition, because I can't get into covering and researching every single one of these divisions. 1A and 1AA, doing both has really taken up all of my time. And getting into Division 2, I don't have the time for it. But if somebody wants to do it, I'll let you have a shot on the show. I'll let you be a part of Wilkinson Central, and we can include that division as well, and you can make of that everything that you want it to be. So we're not just going to limit it to 1A and 1AA if somebody wants to step up and do all of the work for Division 2. And I'll put that out in the forums, because I know a lot of the Division 2 coaches don't listen to us, because a lot of this show doesn't pertain to them. And the reason for doing that, by the way, is because as great as the show is and the blogs and everything, I know a lot of coaches just don't like Division 1AA. Some coaches absolutely are hesitant to 1A because there's no playoff system. So a lot of coaches go to Division 2, and that becomes their favorite division. And weirdly, it's the one we don't cover. So if people want to go over there or people want to cover that division, I will allow it on the show. Okay, so a couple of non-What If Sports things to get to first. I always feel like an opening rant for those of you who are new to the show. And by the way, I'll be taking your calls in about 15 minutes. The number to call is 323-870-3371 if you want to be part of the show. But here's my first topic, and this kind of hit the sports world today. Happened up in Blacksburg, up at Virginia Tech, so I'm very familiar with this. This is a story out of Richmond.com. It was written by, I believe, Mike Barber from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Anyways, and it goes like this. Virginia Tech athletic director Whit Babcock said he had no idea that football players were being assessed fines for violations such as missing team meetings or being late for meals. And he said the practice has been discontinued effective immediately. Images from a television monitor outside the Hokies players' lounge on Wednesday night listed what appeared to be fine structure and named players who already had been assigned fines. Fines ran as low as $10 for missing a team breakfast or tutoring session, to $45 for missing a class, and up to $100 for drawing a personal foul penalty. A second screen included fines for improper equipment that listed the first offense as a $100 fine and the loss of 4 tickets to the next game, and went up to $1,600 for the 7th offense and being left off a possible bowl game trip for an 8th offense. A third screen listed players who apparently had been assessed fine with names, offenses, dates of occurrence, and fine amounts. One player, for example, had been fined $20 for missing a meeting, $10 for missing breakfast that day, and $20 for missing treatment the following day, according to the monitor. And this story goes on and on and on. You can look it up. It's on Richmond.com. It's been all over the news today. that Virginia Tech is assessing fines, and people are freaking out about this. I mean, people are absolutely going to ballistic. I was listening, and I never do this because I cannot stand Mike and Mike. In all honesty, ESPN Radio has completely gone downhill over the past couple of months. But I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning, and they were just – they couldn't fathom the fact that collegiate athletes were being fined for missing classes and such. And let me just say something about this. Technically I was considered a student athlete for being a mascot. I'm not kidding. I had to sign NCAA forms confirming that I was a student athlete. And I did receive a scholarship, but it was a partial scholarship. It was not the full cost of attendance. It wasn't even the full cost of tuition. It was nothing like that. It was like, you got a full ride. I essentially had a half ride on tuition, okay, for being the mascot. But any student at Liberty where I went, any student could be assessed fines. You could be assessed fines for – I was assessed a $50 fine, and this has changed, but I was assessed a $50 fine for watching a rated R movie. $50, watching a rated R movie. You could be in charge – you could be charged $50 for essentially for just having a rated R movie in your dorm room. They could charge you for that. And these aren't athletes I'm talking about. These are just students. And second of all schools have some fine structure for that type of stuff. And, like, one of the things on here was a messy room. At Liberty, if you had a messy room, now you had to do it several times before you got the fine, but they would fine you. And truthfully, like, these fines, people freak out about it. But, like, the messy room, the way to avoid getting that fine was – really all we had to do was make our bed. Like that was it. And a lot of it was they just kind of wanted you to know there is this fine out there if you don't comply because, A, they don't want you to be completely lazy bums. You're going to school so you can learn. B, because at the end of the semester when you have to move out, somebody has to clean all that stuff up, and they don't want to be responsible for, you know, like crazy stains in the carpet that have been there for months. And months. They don't want to be responsible for all that. So I completely understand the fine structures. But what people are seeing is they're seeing that that a team had initiated their own fine structure. And I say, who cares? Because if you look at Virginia Tech, the one common denominator with this program over the past 5 to 10 years is that they have had legitimate discipline issues. Serious discipline issues where players end up having to get kicked off the team because they've broken laws, they've hit people, they've just gone and done crazy, crazy things. And this has gone over time and time again. Why are we so concerned with a program wanting to take extra steps to discipline their players to ensure that their players aren't going to break actual law? Like, I don't have a problem with this. I would have a problem if a school didn't fine you for anything, and if you could just get away with whatever. But Virginia Tech cracking down on this stuff, why is that a big deal? And people are like, well, why can't somebody miss a team breakfast? Well, I'll tell you why. Because they're providing a full-time scholarship for you to be an NCAA athlete. And if you're an NCAA athlete, if you're going to play on that football team, you have to abide by a certain diet. College kids, they aren't going to create their own healthy diet. They're going to eat whatever the heck they want. So, yeah, you have to go to a team breakfast. And tutoring session, I mean, my goodness, was it not but 6 or 7 years ago, a kid graduated from Oklahoma State on the football team, didn't know how to read. I legitimately didn't know how to read. So if you're not going to show up for a tutoring session, you should absolutely be fine. I mean, good grief. Do you know how lucky a lot of students would feel if they got a tutor that they didn't have to pay for? I mean, and these tutors, by the way, these athletic tutors, you know what they do? They sit down with the students one-on-one, and they go through every little thing. Like, these tutors, you aren't selling classes with these tutors unless you're just stupid. Okay? That's how these collegiate tutors are. So if you miss a tutoring session, if you miss a session where somebody's taking time out of their day to help you graduate, yeah, you should be fine, especially when you're being given a scholarship to graduate with, you know, with no debt. I mean, that's ridiculous. And $100 for drawing a personal penalty, personal foul. Virginia Tech's the school where their quarterback has stepped on the throat of another player. They're the school where they've had bench-clearing fights during games. I love Virginia Tech. I'm a huge Hokie fan. But this school needs some sort of system like this. I don't have one problem with it. People freak out about this. Listen, if you go to a law firm, okay, and you intern, and you're a college student, do you think they're going to pay you anything to intern? Couple might. But for the most part, and I've interned with a law firm before, they don't pay you squat. Okay? If you do one little thing to jeopardize a lawsuit with that law firm, they will kick you out. They won't let you come back. But like one little tiny thing, they'll just kick you out. I don't know why we think student athletes need to be treated like they're something professional. Like, they're only allowed to practice 20 hours a week. If I can't find them, and if I've got to pay them to play on my team, then they need to practice more. Okay? I mean, like, in the stuff, like the kid from UConn who said he went to bed hungry. Okay, the NCAA, first of all, if you're a school, you have to provide student athletes with 3 meals a day. Like, it's required. A and B, most schools force you to sign up for a meal plan that provides you 3 meals a day. Okay? So he had 3 meals a day. He went to bed hungry because he didn't have a midnight snack. Like, people take these stories and they sensationalize it, blow it completely out of proportion, and all of a sudden start calling for this crap. I don't have a problem with what Virginia Tech did. I'm glad Northwestern lost their lawsuit because this collegiate athlete stuff, A, nobody's forcing you to be a collegiate athlete. You don't have to be one. You could do what the rest of us do and pay for college. And B, if you choose to be a collegiate athlete, you're graduating with a degree and you're not in debt. Like, I mean, come on. Just, I see some of the stuff and people get so worked up over the dumbest stuff. This is not a big deal. It's not a big deal for a school to find players over the stuff. Okay, next story, and then we'll get into Wilkinson, I promise. But I wanted to talk some college football because it starts up again on Thursday. I'm completely excited for it. North Carolina, South Carolina, 6 Thursday night college football starts. The conference championship odds released recently, and I'm going to go through some of these. I'm going to give you a couple of teams that I think are just ridiculous. The SEC. Alabama was given 5-2 odds, Auburn 15-4 odds, Georgia 5-1 odds to win it. Yeah, right, on all of you guys. The SEC should be about 15-1 odds, with the exception of Kentucky and Vanderbilt, and they should be about 200-1 odds. Okay? I'm not kidding, okay? There's not – Alabama, they are not going to win this conference, guys. Their schedule is so incredibly tough. And Georgia – why does everybody love Georgia this year? Like, what about that offense do people like so much? I'm sorry, that defense. They've got nothing on defense to stop. They couldn't stop Eastern Michigan defensively. And LSU, I mean, they're good, but they're not that much better than South Carolina or Florida. The SEC, outside of Kentucky and Vanderbilt, it's a complete crapshoot. I think Tennessee will be interesting. Arkansas, I loved Arkansas until Jonathan Williams couldn't play anymore. Now I like them, don't love them as much. I do think Auburn, I think Alabama and Auburn are probably the two best teams in the conference, but Alabama's schedule is just not going to, I mean, come on, guys. You're not winning every game in that conference. That's ridiculous. And you don't know who, I mean, you've got serious issues at quarterback. You don't have Amari Cooper this year, so I don't know where you're going to get all this offense from either. I'm a little concerned about that. And, you know, let's see how Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban play out, because last season, Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin, those first couple of games, things did not look so good. Those two guys were given body language unlike any other, like there was some real issues there. I don't think that thing it got better once they started playing well, but if things go sour in those first few weeks for Alabama, it may not be a pretty season for them. They could struggle. Okay, Big Ten, Ohio State was given 1-2 odds, Michigan State 13-4 odds, Wisconsin 8-1 odds. I agree with just about all of that, although I think Michigan State's probably a little bit more dangerous than that. Wisconsin, I don't know how good that team's going to be. They're a little bit all over the place. I just don't know how that thing's going to pan out. And then Michigan is given 12-1 odds. People are completely overplaying Michigan. I mean, completely overplaying Michigan. I love Harbaugh. He's going to turn that program around. But that team's going to be lucky to make a bowl this season. Michigan is different than Florida, okay? Will Muschamp could recruit. And Will Muschamp signed real athletes at Florida. That team, they're going to come in this season, and they've already got the resources to compete for a national title. I'm not exaggerating. That team's one of the most underrated teams in the program, and Jim McElwain's an incredible coach. Michigan is not Florida. Michigan still has Brady Hoke recruits, which wouldn't play in a lot of top 50 or top 60 programs. They're awful. They are completely awful. I think Michigan struggles with Utah. I really do. Michigan's going to struggle out of the gate. This is a new scheme they're learning. It's going to be tough. Harbaugh is a good coach, but he's tough to play for, especially initially. I think he's going to have a couple of donors kind of in his face, and he's a bit of a control freak. I like Harbaugh. He's going to do incredible. But this season, they are not 12-1 odds to win the Big Ten. They aren't better than Rutgers. They aren't better than Minnesota. They aren't better than Maryland. They're about on par with Illinois, Iowa, somewhere around there. But don't give this team 12-1 odds. They are completely overrated. ACC, Florida State, 5-2 odds. Clemson, 3-1 odds. Georgia Tech, 4-1 odds. Louisville and Virginia Tech, 8-1 odds. As far as this conference goes, I think it's more of a crapshoot than anything else. I think Virginia Tech's overrated. They are not 8-1 odds. They have nothing on that offense. And they don't have much on defense either. They've got a good secondary, and that's about it. I think Virginia Tech's going to get blown out by Ohio State in that first game. Florida State, that team is interesting. Not interesting enough to me. I don't think they are 5-2 odds to win the conference. Clemson and Georgia Tech are interesting to me. And then the one team that's getting no love is North Carolina, who was listed at 18-1 odds. That team's got a lot of athletes. They could be good. Big 12, TCU, 17-10 odds. Baylor, 5-2 odds. Oklahoma, 4-1 odds. Oklahoma's going to be awful. Texas was 7-1 odds. That's probably about right. Baylor will be interesting. I think Baylor is a scheme type team where it almost doesn't depend on what type of players you get. So they lose Bryce Petty. I don't think they'll miss a beat. They'll be good, not great. And TCU has athletes all over the place. I think TCU is closer to what Ohio State is. TCU should be 1-2 odds to win the Big 12. And then finally the Pac-12, Oregon 9-4 odds, USC 11-4, Stanford 5-1, UCLA 5-1. Arizona State 6-1. Oregon, I think, is overrated here, although I like their quarterback who came in from Eastern Washington. He's a stud. I don't like the rest of that team. I think they're a little bit overrated. USC, 11-4 odds, I would take that bet. I really, really would. USC, you can make a lot of money on. They've got athletes all over the place. Sarkisian's a smart coach. I think besides Ohio State, nobody in the country is going undefeated. So USC, if they get to 11-1, they could legitimately have a chance at the playoff going into the Pac-12 title game. They are my favorite to win the conference. Stanford, I think, is overrated. And Arizona State, I think, is a team that people really really need to be paying attention to. Those two teams out of Arizona are loaded with talent, just loaded with talent, and anybody ignoring them, you're completely out of your mind. I mean, both of those schools are teams that nobody's talking about right now, and I could legitimately see either one making the playoff. They're both very, very good and very well coached. Okay, so we'll get off on my tangent with real college football, but I hope you guys enjoyed that. Again, I do this because I love college football. That's why I play the game. I think that's why you guys play the game. Okay, so happening in the Wilkinson world, we're going to talk about a couple of the new coaches that have come in that I think will be interesting. Nothing new happened in the ACC. In the Big 12, Mr. Fortune gets fired from Michigan and takes over at Missouri. Missouri coach, myself, CJ Sweat, left to go coach at Liberty. I'll explain my reasons in a minute and why I think the I formation and pro set will provide you with the most amazing comparison in this game. But Mr. Fortune takes over at Missouri. I think he's a great fit there. I think he will do very well recruiting. Missouri, it seems like it's a tough place because you've got all these elites around you. But if you recruit the right way, I mean, I picked up recruits over Notre Dame. I picked them up over Michigan. I was picking, I think I got one off of Ohio State. You can recruit very well at Missouri. And then Batinla takes over at Texas A&M. He gets to go join his boyfriend Chainsaw in the same division of the Big 12. And those two guys, they just absolutely love each other. So I'm happy that they are now able to be together in a holy Big 12 matrimony. In the Big East, not much really happening here. Matter of fact, I don't think anything happened in the Big East. It was a season old in the conference. Nothing happening there. In the Big Ten, taking over at Michigan is Nortonus, I think I'm saying that right. We're going to try and get him on the program. He was at University of Miami a couple seasons ago. Last season, he was absent from the game for whatever reason. He was at Wyoming before he was at Miami. And then before Wyoming, he was at Texas State for a season. Kind of floated around before that. Hasn't really stayed anywhere very long. I think he's a very good coach. I think he knows how to win a lot of games. And I think he'll do a fine job at Michigan. I think his biggest obstacle is going to be recruiting there, as that team has really struggled to pick up in-state recruits against Michigan State and Ohio State. I think they've got to take over the state again, and then I think they've got to focus on winning some of those border battles, which they haven't done a very good job of either. So Norton has his work cut out for him, but I think he will turn Michigan around and he'll be a very competitive coach. Mike Rupp goes over to Purdue. He was at Cal Poly. That, to me, is the coach to watch because he went into this Cal Poly program that wasn't very good before he got there. When he left, he had them as a very competitive team in the Big Sky Conference, which is stacked. They made it to the second round of the playoffs. He has been known for turning programs around. I think he will take this Purdue program. I think they're going to be very, very competitive very, very quickly. I really like that hire by Purdue. He's a very good coach. Not much happening in the CUSA. The coach that was at Drake, I'm not going to attempt to announce his name, takes over at TCU. In the MAC conference, Franklin, who's been at Butler for a number of seasons and never could break into playoffs, he takes over at Kent State. I think that's a good hire. Let's go down here to the Pac-10. I don't think there's anything new going on in the Pac-10. Looks like everything there is the same. In the SEC, there was a little scare that Bobby Mann 21 would have to leave. He ends up being able to stay, but nothing new there either. And then I think the Sun Belt stays the same. There's nobody really changing things around there. And then in the WAC conference, Jeff 18 goes from Texas A&M to Boise State. He was very good at Texas A&M, recruited very well there. Couldn't really ever win very many big games, but he's a good coach. He'll turn Boise State into a top-notch program, and that's a good recruiting area as well. So that's what happened in 1A. I'll let you go through 1AA if you like. If you want to call into the show, I'll discuss any new 1AA coach with you. If you happen to be a new 1AA coach and you would like to be on the show, the number is 323-870-3371. So feel free to call into the show. I'll talk to you about your program, about how I feel about recruiting at that program, and really anything else you want to talk about. So if you're new to the show and you just joined us in 1AA, this is your chance to call in, and I'll talk to you about anything. Again, number is 323-870-3371 if you want to be part of the show. Okay, so the topic I want to get to while we're waiting on calls, if anybody's going to call in, is this experiment that I've been running for the past several seasons, and I've had a chance to talk to a couple coaches about it. Most of them seem more interested than anything else, but I have been testing pro formation and I formation. Now, a lot of you guys are familiar with the I formation offense where essentially if you're running it, you're just throwing to the running backs. You're trying to win the game across the middle. You're trying to overload linebackers, that type of deal. It's been a very successful offense. You're kind of exploiting the system. I don't have a problem with it. I love people that run that offense. I think it's smart. I think it works well. So go ahead and do it. I love the I formation offense. Now, what I tested was the same offense in pro set. And theoretically, this offense should work. But I did the same formation, and I had success with the I formation before when I was at Morehead State. So I did the same exact thing out of the pro set. And what I found was with the same exact formation, it yielded completely different results. Completely different results. And it's interesting, the I formation, I was using the wide receivers to draw the defensive backs out, and then I would just hit the running backs. I'd do the same thing in the pro formation. And in the I formation, I could get 40, 50, 60-yard gains. And in the pro set, it's not that it wasn't successful. You could succeed with it, but it was more dink and dunk football. I was only getting 8 to 12 gains on a good play. Nothing big. Every once in a while, I'd get like a 20-yard gain, but nothing big. Okay, it'd always be little short things. Now, you can adjust the formation and do something a little bit different and still accomplish the same thing of beating someone over the zone and still getting big gains. But if you do it the exact same way in the I formation, you're going to get different results. So you can accomplish it, but you have to run things differently. And so the point of the experiment is that the pro set simulates differently than the I formation. Now, of course, on the front of that, it doesn't sound like a big deal. But let me explain to you why that's a huge deal in this game. Okay, because in the I formation, here is what your formation looks like. Obviously, you've got the five linemen and the quarterback. You have one tight end, two wide receivers, two running backs. In the pro set, you have one tight end, two wide receivers, two running backs. So, essentially, these two formations are the same thing, but they don't simulate the same way. And if you go to the formation page, you'll see, and if you know anything about football, you already know this, but in the pro set, the two running backs line up behind the quarterback on both sides of the quarterback. The wide receivers line up on both sides of the quarterback, or on each side of the quarterback. In the I formation, the running backs line up directly behind the quarterback and directly behind each other, making an I, and the receivers line up to the right of the quarterback. Okay, but in the I formation, it simulates different than the pro set. So what does all this mean? Well, what I think it means, and what I have not been able to completely prove yet or prove exactly how it's simulating, but what I think this means is that how each player lines up in the formation has an impact on the game. And if that's the case, then that means this engine likely isn't just a game of numbers. What it could possibly mean is that the engine is simulating certain routes within the game. And we don't know what those routes are. We don't know if our receiver is going inside, outside, is coming back on a draw route. We don't know if our other receiver is running a slant. We don't know. There's no way to find out. We don't know when our tight end's staying back to buy or whatever. And I could go on and on and on. We don't know if these passes to the running backs are screen passes. Like, we have no idea. You would assume anything that's a medium pass or longer wouldn't be a screen pass, but we don't really have any way of knowing. All we know, or all we think we know, is that this is a numbers game. But if it's just a numbers game, if all this is me getting two running backs and a tight end to go 5 yards down the field where you only have two linebackers, and so now I've got three options to your two options, if that's all this is, then why does the pro set simulate differently than the I formation? And again, you can be successful in dominating the zone with either one of these formations, but you cannot run the formation the exact same way. You have to run them differently. I think, and this is a big assumption, but I think if you can figure out the reason why the I formation and the pro set simulate differently, you could figure out the key to this engine. I think that's the key. You're not going to get it from sight milling the staff. I wish you would, but they don't seem interested in actually talking about that. They seem interested in just kind of putting bandages on things that if you've got a problem, they'll fix it, but otherwise, they're not really going to bother with it. I think the key to figuring out this engine is figuring out why in the heck the pro set and the I formation, which if this is a numbers game, they're the exact same formation, why they simulate differently. Because in a side that you can't be successful with one, you can be successful with both, but I can't figure out for the life of me why they simulate differently. My experiment, which is taking me forever to complete, is only that I have figured out that they do, in fact, simulate differently. So, listen, if you want to call into the show, give me your thoughts. I know Orange Pace, Chris has a bunch of thoughts on this. The number is 323-870-3371. If you want to call in, talk about it. You can disagree with me. If you want, I love it when people call in and they just yell at me. But you can call in, be part of the show, and give me your reasons on why you think I'm wrong, why you think I'm right, or if you've got any thoughts on to why this is transpiring. Because I really think if you could figure this out, then you could open up a whole bunch of new doors into how we should place our linebackers, if the slot receiver actually makes a difference on which player is playing in that position, and if they're actually running different routes. I think you open up a whole slew of doors if you can figure out the difference between pro set and I formation. And the difference, by the way, that is described to us is that the I formation is supposed to be ideally suited for pounding the ball on the ground between the tackles with occasional pass thrown in to keep the defense honest. The pro set description says the pro set offensive set consists of one tight end, two wide receivers, one running back, and one fullback. It is the most balanced formation for both passing and running the football, resulting in more flexible play calling. So it doesn't really go into explaining why they run differently, but it does say that the I formation is best suited for running between the tackles. I guess it's saying it's best suited for inside runs. But that brings up the question as to what is your offensive line doing on an outside run? What are your receivers doing? Are they ever coming in the block? I mean, if you can figure out this difference, you've got a whole slew of questions that I think could be opened up by just figuring out the difference between those two formations. Okay, I'm trying to figure out if there's anything else going on in our world that we really need to talk about. I'll be honest, I have not looked too much at recruiting. I'm kind of doing what I've done in the past and just kind of waiting for guests to bring up their reports and seeing what they say about it. But I've not done much research on which teams have done a good job so far. Really, my recruiting takes are going to be next week after the guest reports come out. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. Wilkinson Weekly, or I'm sorry, I keep calling it Wilkinson Central today's the 28th, and the season starts on September 5th. I would love it if we are live by September 4th. That's kind of my ideal date. So if we get it done by then, look for a post in the forums. We'll put up the website, and we'll And I want your thoughts. I want everybody's thoughts on it. I want to know what you guys want to see. I think if this thing looks more and more like ESPN, the better. But if you guys have other ideas into what would be easier for you and easier to read, then let me know, and we can go more so in that direction. Okay, guys. Nobody's calling in. That's okay. By the way, the radio show, you guys should know, this thing is just kind of taking off. In the past, and it's always done well, but in the past, we've only gotten up to usually 30 viewers, unless I have a really good interview plan, like B. Hazelwood. We had well over 100 people listen to it. And same thing for Yahtzee. Had a bunch of people listen to that one. But we have reached this point where every show we do, we're hitting close to 60 listens. And the listens, for it to count as a listen, it has to last for like so many minutes, so it can't just be somebody clicks on the link and then exits out. You have to actually listen for so many minutes before you leave for it to count. So this show, guys, it's completely taken off. And if you look at the stats in 1A and 1AA, I'm not trying to brag on the show or anything like that, but just on how big our world has gotten, we're like over 50 coaches in each 1A and 1AA. So we're getting to a point now where these divisions are going to be half full. And I'm looking at recruiting, just being at Liberty. And I've had a very good recruiting season, but I've also ran into teams all over the place. Recruiting now is not what it was 5 seasons ago for me at Jacksonville, where I could pick and choose whatever I wanted and they were going to be right there. I mean, I still have... I've got a very good class coming in, but this is definitely different. The world is just so much more full. There are coaches all over the place. I think like the weakest conference is the Northeast or Southern Conference, and it still has like 3 coaches in there. And just about every other conference has at least 5. Some are getting up into the numbers of like 7. So this thing's just really starting to take off. I'm excited about it. And once this website gets live, guys, it's going to be absolutely awesome. All right, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We will be back hopefully on Tuesday, I believe. Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, and then obviously Friday of next week, we will have our dawn of a season ranking. I'm so excited to bring that out. It's my favorite show of the year. But for right now, I want to thank everybody for joining us. This is the CJ Sweat Show. Have a fantastic Friday evening and a good weekend to you.